Welcome to Season 5 of the Big Sci-Fi Podcast with Adina, Brian, Chris, and Steve, the biggest sci-fi podcast in the galaxy. The adventure is just beginning here at the Big Sci-Fi Podcast, and we invite you to come aboard the Starship Tangent. We know you'll enjoy the conversation, the laughter, the banter back and forth, and most of all, friends who love hanging out to talk about all things science fiction. Set your phasers to fun. Here we go. And welcome to a very special edition of the Big Sci-Fi Podcast, a special segment, I should say. My name's Brian Donahue, and I am here in person in my studio with the Adina Mignona. How you doing?
Hey, Brian. I'm awesome today. It's been a great day.
It has been a fantastic day, and one of the reasons, besides the fact that we're together, our families have been hanging out the last couple days, but we just witnessed the totality of the solar eclipse in Medina, Ohio. We'll talk about Medina in just a minute. Has a very special place in Adina's past and in her heart. But anyway, so yeah, you might have heard of this eclipse thing happening, and it just so happens that here in Northeast Ohio, we were blessed to be in the path of totality. So Adina, why don't you explain to people what that means, and then we'll jump into some of the fun stuff.
Well, very, very, very simple. The moon is coming in front of the sun in a way that actually, for a short period of time, blocks the sun. Partial eclipses, but this was, at least for where we are, a total eclipse. And what people, I think the one of the subtleties that people don't necessarily know is the moon isn't in a perfect circular orbit around Earth. It's in a slightly elliptical orbit. So even if the moon comes in front of the sun, the totality part, really, it is a function of how close or far away the moon is, too. If it's too far away, it's really not truly a total eclipse. But today's, for a lot of us, was.
Yes.
And it was spectacular.
And it was a total eclipse of the heart as well.
We heard that song a lot.
That song was being played on a boombox
family.
I want to give a shout out to Christy and Ryan Baker, my brother and sister-in-law. They opened their home up to us and to Adina and her family, and also other members of my wife's family to come and witness. They had great food, just hanging out. It's a beautiful day. We were very concerned, Adina, if this trip would be worth it for you and your family, because Ohio is pretty much an overcast state. Mm-hmm. We complain about it a lot. We do have beautiful summers, but in the winter, fall, April, a lot of cloudy weather. So we have had rainy, nasty, sleety, wet weather. And today, about, 9 o'clock?
Sometime in the late morning is when it started getting really nice. But, I knew it was going to work out when you told me that if I came to see you and that we were going to Medina, that's when I knew this was all going to work out.
Right. So Medina.
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 Oh my gosh.
Not Medina.
No, see? No.
We were in a town. My sister-in-law, Christy, and their husband, Ryan, and their kids live in a town called Medina. And it's about 30-ish minutes south of Cleveland here. And so that's where we were headed. And just think about it, folks. Adina, Medina, what's the connection?
Well, okay. I tell people that I'm from New York because I'm from New York, because my memories of growing up are all from New York. But I was born in Ohio. I was born in Youngstown, Ohio.
Very cool.
And my mother, who is from New York, when she saw the town Medina, she pronounced it in her head like New Yorkers would. Medina. That's, M-E-D-I-N-A looks like Medina. And it looks like that to me, too. I have to remind myself constantly that that's not what it is.
Phonetically, it should be. Right? Medina.
Well, again, depends on where
debatable?
You're from,
okay.
Right? It depends on where you're from. And the reason my name is A-D-E-E-N-A. So A-D-I-N-A is also pronounced Adina, and it is typically, it's a Hebrew name. And most people who hear my name assume it's A-D-I-N-A and assume it's a Hebrew name, unless they didn't, unless they're not aware. But where I grew up in a very like kind of 50% Jewish place, so most people would think that my name was Hebrew. Well, turns out my mother, when I around the time I was born, she saw this town, and she just kind of played with it. I assume she just knew the name.
Gotcha.
And did it. And she had always told me that she wanted it to be with two E's and not an I, because she was worried that if she did spell my name A-D-I-N-A, people in Ohio would pronounce it Adina, and that's wrong. So it was like, well, let's do two E's. But I grew up thinking that she knew the Hebrew name and just spelled it differently. I recently found out, no, she just kind of word played or phonetically played or sounded out whatever, Medina, it's Medina, and then just came up with the name. So apparently I am named after Medina, Ohio.
Fantastic.
So once you said that's where we were going, then I was like, this is meant to be.
Right.
You know, a lot of people I know made plans like 6 months ago to go somewhere. They bought tickets. They got Airbnbs. And we did nothing. And it was only till about 2 weeks ago I was starting to get, you know, FOMO over this. And I realized, well, wait a second, you know, Ohio, we could do a drive to Ohio. Yeah. Who do I know? Wait, Brian's in Ohio.
Yep.
Can we come crash at Brian's place? And, well, here we are.
Yep. And where I am in Canton was just on the very edge. So while some people, we just talked to our neighbor, she felt like it was very impressive. But we saw full totality. It was absolutely amazing. The animal life ceased to make noise around us. The birds stopped chirping. It was very surreal and spectacular. And I wasn't going to go to Medina today until you guys said you were coming. And so glad we did, because it was something to behold.
Yes.
All the hype, all the people converging along the path of totality. So I get it now. Mm-hmm. It's so cool.
And the way it gets dark in those couple minutes, like right up to it, it's a weird kind of dark.
Yeah.
It's just that's the only way to describe it. The closest I'd come to seeing something like this was in 1994 when I was in college at Maryland. There was a it was a partial, but it was very close. And that's the memory I have, was the weird, almost darkish thing in the middle of the day.
Gotcha.
That's the weird part. For me, that is the weird part, is seeing the dark in the middle of the day.
And we were watching the NASA live feed, too, on television. At least some of us were popping in and out. And they were showing other people that were ahead of us that were in totality. Mm-hmm. And whole huge gobs of people cheering and getting real excited. And I'm like, God, that's okay. Wow, they're cheering. Okay. And then it happened for us, and we're like, yeah,
this is great. Yeah.
You know, it was just something to behold. Really interesting. And all our children were there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll remember this for a long, long time. And hopefully our kids will too, because it's going to be quite a long time for us.
20 years.
20 years?
20 years until on the continental U.S. There's one again. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I heard NASA say, They had feeds in many different cities around the nation that were going to be in the path of totality. And they said it was something like since the 1800s that Cleveland, Ohio, had seen a full eclipse like this. So big deal around here. We were very concerned about traffic, too. And not just the weather, but a lot of people were saying the traffic's going to be a nightmare, especially afterwards. So we got to Medina around 9 o'clock. But before we went to my in-law's house, we went to this amazing store called Sweets and Geeks.
Yes.
And they have all the candy and soda pop and energy drinks and weird varieties of stuff, but it's all based around nerddom and
fandom.
It's not even
the candy, right? It's all the other stuff. They had all kinds of games and Funko Pops and cards. They had D&D stuff, Warhammer stuff, Pokemon stuff, all
comic
kinds of board
books,
games. All kinds of just, you know, pop culture, you know, memorabilia. Although not a lot of Trek stuff.
Oh, I was sad. I was very sad.
Some Trek stuff.
Just a couple things.
I bought something.
And I actually posted.
You did.
Wait, I don't think I posted the picture of Spock, Potato Head. Mr. Spock Potato Head. What do they call that?
I don't know, but you know, I feel like I've seen, even though I don't necessarily buy all the stuff, I've seen all this stuff.
Right.
I had never seen a Mr. Potato Head Spock before.
Yeah.
So I looked at that and I was like, okay, I had to get it.
Now, the question collectors want to know, are you going to keep it in the package or are you going to get it out and play with it? So, and there's no right or wrong answer here. I guess it depends on who you are.
Depends on your point of view. Yeah. No, I will probably take it out and play with it. I am that person.
That's what I would do,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. There was that whole Big Bang Theory episode where Sheldon, like, you know, he took it out, he played with it, and he broke it, and he lied about it. And then Leonard Nimoy was in the episode. Mm-hmm. His voice in, you know, came to him in a dream.
Yeah.
And it was actually, you know, Leonard Nimoy in the episode kind of helping him right his wrongs.
Right. Yeah. Fantastic television, if you ask me.
Yes.
So we spent time before we went to my in-law's house at this amazing store. If you're ever in Medina, Ohio, and you have any fandom of any types, check out this store. Check out all the memorabilia they have, all the toys, all the games, everything, and then get some candy too. It's pretty spectacular. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, that we did. There was another Star Trek thing we bought there. The Romulan Ale.
The energy drink.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not Romulan, not an alcoholic drink, but there was like it was like a soda energy drink called Romulan Ale.
I didn't buy one this time, but I've got
it.
A can.
You have a can.
I saved the can after I drank it because it's now displayed by my Mr. Spock Build-A-Bear that was actually my kid's that I said is mine. So, but I digress. So, yeah, anyway, so we had a fantastic time. Hope that if you're listening to this and you got to be in the main path of this thing, send us an email, get on our Facebook page, let us share some pictures of you and your gathering around the eclipse. And we'd love to see that, love to comment on that. By the way, our Facebook page, we're very active on, guys, and our Instagram page. If you comment, especially on our Facebook page, you're probably going to see Adina, myself, Steve, or Chris comment on that thing. Mm-hmm. So highly
recommend. Maybe two of us.
Yes. Sometimes we're just that nerdy.
Yes.
And we enjoy interacting with our listeners. And Adina, it is so much fun to have you in my home. And that unfortunately, you guys have to leave very early tomorrow mm-hmm. morning. But 5 hours away.
Yeah, it's not too
bad.
Thank you for hosting us. This has been great. Thank you so much.
You guys need to come back so Greg can go through the Football Hall of Fame here in Canton.
We got to do that too. Yep.
Anyways, all right. Well, Adina, thanks for this and to all our listeners. We now return you to our regularly scheduled podcast.
Hello, amazing listeners of the Big Sci-Fi Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the recently released movie on Netflix starring Adam Sandler called Spaceman. Brian, Chris, Steve, and I, Adina, are going to be doing it with a special guest. We're going to be spoiling the heck out of this movie, so if you want to go watch it first and then come back to this, you know, please do. But before I get into that, I want to give a big sci-fi shout-out to our host network, Trek Geeks. Check out trekgeeks.com for our podcast and so much more Trek and sci-fi content. And please help us out by remembering to like, share, write a review, all those things that help us get discovered by other amazing listeners such as yourself. And if you're on Facebook, come find and join the Big Sci-Fi Podcast Facebook group. Now, back to today's topic of Spaceman and to our special guest. Now, we spoke with him, was it about a year ago?
Oh, at least,
It just seems like yesterday.
It does seem like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's actually how we all learned about this movie, because he was mm-hmm. a science consultant for it. So please welcome back my colleague and astronaut, Rick Mastracchio. Thanks, Rick, for joining us again.
Hi, Adina. Hey, guys, Chris, Steve, Brian. Hopefully everybody's doing well. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
We appreciate you being here, too. Yeah.
Yes. So when we, recently, you know, this movie came out and we're like, oh, hey, we know about this movie because you told us about it. And then Steve was the first one to watch it and brought it up to the rest of us. And we're like, OK, let's do this and let's see if Rick will come back and talk to us about it. So I think we've all seen it. And I want to say to everybody, you know, what was your expectation going into this movie? And Brian, maybe do you want to start?
Okay. My expectation was that if Rick had his hands in it, it was going to be the best movie ever made. it was fun. I do have to say, in all seriousness, it was fun watching a movie having some personal you know, relation to with Rick being a part of it in some way. And so that was kind of fun to watch a movie going, oh, hey, I know somebody that's involved in this. And but overall feeling of the movie, I really honestly went into it with totally mind open, no knowledge of the book before, hadn't read it. Adam Sandler is kind of one of those comedic actors that has really come into his own. I enjoy his serious movies for the most part. I think he's got some talent that is really remarkable, actually. And I think he shines in this film, and that he did a phenomenal job. It had some weird stuff. I wasn't expecting the huge spider. What the hey? And it's at the same time, though, it was also interesting. But so overall, I'm going to say I feel like I liked the film. It was it's not, you know, you don't feel all happy go lucky at the end of it. But I did like it, and I'm excited to talk more about why I liked it. So, and some of the things I didn't like, and obviously the spider is one of them. So.
Okay, Steve.
Well, same thing. You know, I remembered when it was listed on Netflix that Rick had spoken about it over a year ago, and I had trepidations about Adam Sandler in a dramatic role, but I figured, you know, give him a chance, give it a chance, watch the film. So I watched the film, and as I was watching the film, I started to think about what this film was like. And I'm kind of got to the point where this was a film as if Ingmar Bergman was to make a science fiction film, or maybe Werner Herzog was to make a science fiction film. Because as I watched it, I became more happy and excited. And it really drew me in. And I think the only thing that made me feel good was looking forward to a big jug of Nutella and an oversized spoon to eat it with. Other than that, it was really what I was hoping for.
Reminds me of my home world or whatever. Yeah.
Awesome. So I'll go, and then just to kind of round out our big sci-fi group for the moment, and then Rick, I'm definitely anxious to hear your opinions and your thoughts about this. So going into this, other than knowing that it existed and that you were, you know, did some work on it and that Adam Sandler was starring it, I knew nothing. And other than the vague feeling that maybe folks in the universe were not thrilled with this movie, you know, that it was not getting like, oh, my God, blockbustery kind of reviews coming out. And I think 5 minutes in, I understood why. This was more of an artsy film. Mm-hmm. Versus like a sci-fi film. And I think when you have a film titled Spaceman, and then you have Adam Sandler, who is, while he's been doing dramatic and other things, he is more known for the comedic, over-the-toppy kind of stuff. I can see that a lot of people might watch this and have a completely different expectation from what it was and then be disappointed, because I think this kind of artsy philosophical stuff is got a much more narrow, you know, appeals to a narrow audience, not a wide audience. So that said, I think I enjoyed it, especially, you know, so yeah, I found out while I was watching it I think in the opening credits, it says, hey, based on a book. Like, oh, based on a book, what's the book? So I went and I downloaded the book and I started reading it right after I finished the movie, and I'm halfway through. And I have to say, I'm enjoying the book immensely. I think the book is great.
Very cool.
And I'm going to be recommending this to a lot of people. Now, again, it's not a classic sci-fi. It's a philosophical, very philosophical thing. And for people who like certain kind of science fiction, like there's, you know, Binti, and then there's another book that I'm blanking on the name of. There's a certain kind of science fiction people will like. It's not wide, but I think it's great. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually anxious to, now that I've almost read the book, to go back and rewatch the movie.
Oh, really?
Yes. I'm kind of that intrigued. And with that, Rick, what'd you think?
Well, I have all those thoughts that you guys all said and a lot more, to be honest with you. I mean, we have to go back 4 years ago, I was getting phone calls from the producer saying, hey, we would really like to talk to you about living in space and, you know, the psychological, emotional, physical challenges of a long duration mission. And they hooked me up with the writer. And then that we spent many, many hours talking to each other. And then I reviewed the script, and then I was helping the set designers, and I was helping the costume designer, and then I was helping. Then I visited the set and helped Adam Sandler learn how to float in space. And but yeah, all along the way, I had these different expectations. Like you, I said, oh, it's a book. Let me go read the book. I read the book and I said, huh? How is this going to be funny? How is Adam Sandler going to make this funny? I'm not sure how he's going to play it. So then we talked more, and then I read the script, and I'm saying, it still doesn't seem funny. And then I realized, okay, that's supposed to be funny. It took me a really long time to figure that out. But it's different, right? You know, one of the complaints I think I have, and a lot of people have, oh, it's the same movie. They just changed a couple characters around. And so this is certainly different. So you can't complain about that. Mm-hmm. Johan Renk was the director, and if you ever saw his Chernobyl series on HBO, I was curious
about that, but no.
OMG, man, that is a great series he does. It's like a six part episode on Chernobyl, and that he did five years ago. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, when I was watching that series, I felt like I was back in Russia. You know, I spent a lot of time in Russia, and the scenery and the sets and the people were like, wow, he captured Russia perfectly. So he was fantastic. He really was down. I want the details. And they were really very interested. The space station, you know, I'm just going to blabber for a little while. The space station scenery was fantastic. Did a great job building that space station. The I call them special effects of Adam Sandler in a weightless environment looked really, really good. I saw very few points where, he moved this way when he should that or something. But it was really great in terms of those details and things like that. Yeah. Hanus, you know, the real spider, the imaginary spider. It seemed like when I read the book and I read the script, it was more they tried to make it unclear whether it was real or not, you know? So in the movie, they didn't, in my opinion, they just didn't seem to address, are you real kind of thing. So anyways, it was all those things, you know. It was interesting. It was a little bit strange. It was Adam Sandler did a great job as, you know, the very unhappy astronaut it was all those things. Yeah.
So I'm glad you said some of that, because as I was watching it, and especially mindful that you consulted on it too, though, I was, you know, so while I work in the space industry, so I have a lot of knowledge about stuff. I haven't been there myself. So coming from that position, I was very happy with what I saw. Things met my expectation in terms of what I would expect it to be like. The interesting thing that came across in the book that I'm kind of sad that I felt lost in the movie was really appreciating and understanding that the character in the book, this was not a trained astronaut. He was a professor that happened to fit the scientific need. So then they took this person and trained him, and he struggled in the training in the book. Some of the weightless training, he was constantly getting ill, and he wasn't necessarily suited for a life of solitude. So he's not necessarily someone that would have been selected for as an astronaut, just kind of how we think of today NASA selects astronauts. And I feel like that's actually very important, because it really speaks to his psychological situation, which then speaks to why this might be an imaginary spider. I don't know. But it was interesting that unfortunately, as always, when books get translated to movies, some details get lost. And I'm kind of sad that one got lost, because I think that would have helped a lot.
It's easier for me to honestly imagine the spider as totally 100% real. I think I came, by the time I got to the end of this film, okay, and this, I don't know if this is a popular opinion or not. I don't really care. It's, you know, but
your opinion.
This was, even if it wasn't like really a spider, it's how that being chose to reveal itself to this character. So it's weird and I kind of loved it. Like, I hated the spider. I would have been better with like a dolphin or, you know, or something like that. But I don't know. I just, it was very interesting. It was
like scary clown. Okay.
Good night, Martha. Get out of town.
Well, you know, the thing about the spider was, and I had just finished reading Project Hail Mary.
Spoiler alert, there might be some spoilers on Project Hail Mary for anyone who hasn't read that either.
Is that in that book, the alien he encounters is much spider-like.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not on a solo mission. He was stuck with the situation he ended up with. And I want to give away too much. Okay. In this movie, he's sent on a mission all by himself, an extremely large spacecraft. And I kept watching going, why didn't they have anybody else with him? Why would he send him alone in such a large mission for the fear that if something happened to him, if he was injured or ill or he went crazy, that there'd be somebody there to center him? And I would have been just very happy if the spider was completely in his mind, because give it reality and to make it living, at some point you think he would have said to mission control, hey guys, yeah, there's like a giant spider on the spaceship. Any idea how it got in here? Because I don't know how it entered the spaceship, but it's here. And I'd love to send you some photos, but it seems to be all the cameras are broken. I wonder why that happened. Oh, well, but still, at least just say, hey, guys, there's a giant spider on the spaceship with me. Either I'm not going to tell you because they'll think I'm going crazy and you'll abort the mission, or you will do something about it. It just I would have been just happy. Huh? Yes, Vitch gets you 99.999% better cleaning with the bomba. Yes, I love it. Nothing like a commercial on your space mission to get authorization to use the cleansing agent to be
commercials, actually.
Well, that's
the premise, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was the thing. That was the other thing that I feel like didn't come through as clearly in the movie as it did in the book, was that this mission was pretty much 100% commercially sponsored. So every product on that had a commercial thing, and that's how they funded it. That's why, you know, the check, you know, so there's this cloud, you know, out there that they want to go study. They sent an unmanned probe that basically failed. So like, okay, we got to get a manned thing up there. And none of the other countries or major powers wanted to step up to fund it and do it or do it in a reasonable time. So the Czechs are like, hey, this is our time to shine. Let's do this. And we're going to send a guy. We're going to take this on. But then to do it, it's a fully, you know, pretty much a commercial mission. And,
it's like the telephone and the bomba were the only real things that were kind of commercial in the movie, but there was a lot more.
It was constant in the book.
That's interesting.
That's it.
Yeah.
And what's also interesting, of course, the only way to communicate with Earth is on the, what's it called? The Czech phone? I forget what they call that. The Czech Connect?
Czech Connect.
Yeah. Which is quicker than the speed of light. How, kids? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but how, kids?
Because marketing says so.
It's complicated.
But at least in The Martian, he had to deal with the delay of waiting for a message to get to him and back. And then the other thing that was just
Steve. Just enjoy it.
I know. I'm not supposed to question it.
Faster than the speed of light. Just enjoy the technology.
I leave
you
that to Neil deGrasse Tyson to have an aneurysm over things like this. But again, the other thing was that this cloud was visible during the day in the sky on Earth.
Yeah.
Compared to the sun in relation to the size that we can view it, this thing would have dwarfed everything in the entire solar system.
Well,
to be able to be seen from the Earth as large as they depicted it, which also seemed a little weird. Space consultant, what do you think about that?
Well, originally, that cloud was supposed to be near Venus, I believe.
Yes, in the book. I did read about that, yeah.
And I remember in the script it was like that originally too. And then one day it was out near Saturn or Uranus or whatever they moved it to, Jupiter, mm-hmm. I forget. And there's like, yeah, Venus seems like it'll be too bright. We want it to be darker where we're going. And I'm like, okay.
Like I asked Adina, you did cash the check before they finished the film, right? Just to make sure that they didn't go back to you and say, hey, we're sorry, we're out of money. You can't cash the check, you know?
Yeah. Well, I didn't get quite as much as Adam Sandler. I mean, I maybe got enough to buy Adam Sandler lunch. Maybe I got it.
Okay.
So how many questions the movie opened up with toilet problems. You guys talk a lot about toilet problems.
Yeah. So that really was a little bit of a surprise. And I had to go back and think about that scene where, Adam Sandler's, he's on the toilet and he's like, and it's like, why did, and the toilet's making all this noise and he calls Mission Control. He says, Mission Control, I really want permission to fix the toilet. I forget exactly what he says, or I need the procedures, or when can I fix the toilet?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, now, Adina, was that in the book? Was that scene in the book?
I don't remember. There was something related to it.
Okay. Because I was trying to think. I told these guys a lot of stories.
Yeah.
And I told them the story about when I was living on the space station and the toilet was like 90 decibels. And they wouldn't let us fix it. And we're like, Houston, we need to fix the toilet. You know, we can't, we're putting earplugs in. When you're not on the toilet, somebody else is. It's terrible. But they say, well, we're not sure it's supposed to. We don't think it's really doing that or something. It was like, well, it's not time to fix the toilet. You just fixed it a couple of months ago, so you can't fix it now. We're like, well, what are you talking about? And they made us like take video of the toilet. They made us do measurements that we had to like hold the microphone next to the toilet. It's like they just,
it's like my grandfather whenever I got a car issue, put the phone up to the car and let me hear it.
Yeah, they just didn't believe us. And so it took like the end of Expedition 38 had to end, and we started Expedition 39 when the new crew came up, and then the new flight director came on and said, fix the toilet, and we said thank you.
I also like how in the movie they chose to introduce the spider in the toilet, because I think that's one of the greatest fears any person has is finding a spider in the bathroom while you're sitting on the toilet.
Flush it.
Yes. Come in here and get rid of this thing. I can't get off the toilet because I'm afraid it's going to bite me.
In the book, they had some other mechanical problem. It wasn't it was definitely nowhere near as pronounced. They kept having him leading up to approaching the cloud. Kind of, he was constantly in the lab making sure that the payload, the scientific equipment was gonna work. I think that was more for the movie, and then so that might really be based on the conversations you had. But I was chuckling because you've told us, I've heard your toilet stories a few times. I was chuckling through that. I was like, that I'm hoping that that's actually coming out of out of Rick, because
that's
got writer credit for that, right?
Should have.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
They should allow you to fix the toilet without question, because if they say, well, just go outside and use the bush, there's no outside, there's no bush, So.
Explain.
We could have fixed it ourselves, but we didn't.
That's the thing is, maybe explain for Brian and Steve and the listeners kind of how that dynamic works. I mean, you're there on site. Like, where does a boundary between what you're authorized to do and what you really do, you need Mission Control to say, oh, go do? Because I would think some mechanical problems, you would just be, just go do. You're there.
Well, yeah, there's, but you're a team, right? There's some of the things that you don't know, they know. For example, they have very limited spare parts, for example, on the toilet. And the reason why, one of the reasons I believe that they didn't want us to fix it, because we had just swapped out the fan pump separator maybe 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to last like, let's say 6 months, but this one failed after two. And they're like, well, we can't afford to swap it out because we only have replacements for every 6 months. And so, you know, they're down on the ground debating it and trying to figure out, okay, can we put one on a Cygnus spacecraft and send it up, or another one, or can we do this? So there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes going on that you don't know about. You don't know how many fan pump separators are hidden on that space station. They're like Easter eggs, right? They're hidden somewhere, and they won't tell you where they are until they give you permission to. So yes, you could certainly take matters into your own hands and do that, but that's just not good teamwork.
Okay. But I feel like when it's something, you know, really, it's a matter of your quality of life, you know. Yeah.
There's a lot of examples of that. We had all our food warmers were broken, and we had a way for them to send up repairs. We had like 3 food warmers, all of them broken. So we were eating like basically, you know, lukewarm cold food for, I don't know, 3-4 weeks before they got around to sending us the repair instructions and the permission to repair it. There's a lot of examples of that, I'm sure, on a lot of crews. But again, it's a matter of the ground standard priorities, and sometimes your comfort is not always the highest priority.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You would think they would want you to be happy with what your body needs to let go of to feel good while you're doing your work. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I always
had the rule that if the crew can't go to the bathroom, everybody in mission control can't go to the bathroom.
Oh,
seems so reasonable.
That'll get that toilet fixed.
Oh, yeah.
I think this also
toilet repair.
That's good. I think this also speaks, though, to the astronaut selection process. And, you know, they are looking for, you know, they're looking for the right folks who can endure those kinds of because those are hardships, and you need the right personality mix of people who can possibly endure those kinds of stresses. Like, just any old person just can't do that. And it's a different selection process from back in like the Apollo days, you know.
Right. And for long durations, it's an accumulative thing. You're away from your family. Okay, it's not a big, you know, it's not great, but it's not a big deal. Oh, you're eating bad food. Oh, the toilet makes a lot of noise. Oh, you can't open the window. You can't do this, that. And you get this cumulative effect, you know, and who knows where people will snap, right? It's my food is cold. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
So you never know where somebody's going to snap.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things I read about is in Japan, the astronaut selection process there, they have the candidates fold 1,000 paper cranes, and then they examine the paper cranes to look for imperfections and all these things. And it's about doing a repetitive task over and over and over, and seeing how they deal with like that repetitive stress, basically.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They want to look like cranes on number 20.
Okay, so that's not good selection criteria for NASA.
Yeah.
So when you were consulting on the film, Rick, did they discuss like what his motivation is on his day-to-day life? Because a one person on a mission like that, the most they ever showed him really doing anything was running on the treadmill in the film. That was like the biggest thing they kept showing him, but it never really got into his just day-to-day. What was the whole point of the mission? Was it just to capture, you know, trope of dust? I mean, for the rest of the whole mission, he would have had to have daily functions. And when you were on the ISS, were you assigned daily functions you did for your shift? And how long was that? Was it an 8-hour shift, a 12-hour shift? And did you always have something to do, or was there downtime that you just didn't have anything to do?
Yeah, well, let's start with the movie question. I was actually there when they were filming the treadmill scene. The couple days I was there, they were filming the treadmill scene, and they were doing a few scenes of him just floating through the space station. So that was cool to see. And the set was really high quality. And I helped out a lot with the set, but a lot of little details. They wanted to know, I said, your labeling here is not correct, you know, and they said, oh, really? Oh, tell us how. And I said, well, nobody's going to know except me that your labeling is not right. Well, we want it right. Okay. Well, at the end of this, I had all
right, cool.
Yeah. So they were really into the details. But yeah, like I said, like Adina said, I think the book goes into a little more detail, and maybe the scripted as well, you know. one of the things that I learned when I do the, as I do these consultant and review scripts, and then I watch the TV show, like Beacon 23 is another show that's out now that I've consulted on all the scripts. You read the scripts, but then you watch the show and you're like, wait a second, that's not the same script. So there's a lot of, I guess the directors, the actors, and editors, and it all kind of comes together. And the story is basically the same, but it just comes together in a very different way. It's like, it's not like you could sit there and read the script and say exactly what they're going to say and when. It's not, learned that it's not like that. But yeah, supposedly he was just, yeah, he didn't have a whole lot to do. I remember he had a lot of training and practice. And I think there was a robotic arm or some kind of device where he captured the particles, a lot of maintenance and things. So I think they tried to model it after how we live on the International Space Station to a certain extent. And that's, you know, and your question is, yes, we have every second of pretty much every day told what to do. And it's, I call it chasing the red line. You know, there's like a big calendar or of all every hour of the day. And then there's this red line that moves across, and you better have, when the red line goes to the next task, you better be there ready to go do the next task. You're constantly chasing this red line. Okay. What do I do now? Oh, I got 30 minutes to eat lunch. Okay. Okay. What do I do now? All right, I got to go do this. And it's not as bad. It's bad, but it's not as bad as it sounds. 'Cause you get used to it. Number one. Number two, you get ahead on the schedule sometimes, like especially when we first got up there, we were way ahead of schedule. Like when you first get up there as an astronaut on board the space station, they assume you're going to be like 40% capable of doing what they need you to do. So they take it easy on you. And I was my fourth mission. I'm like, really, at 40%? I'm not going to be at 40% on my fourth mission. I'm going to be at 120% when I get there. So a lot of times is spent just like twiddling my thumbs saying, Houston, hey, what do you got? Hey, Houston, what do you got? But, you know, then they start packing in. Hey, this guy wants more. We'll give him more. More science. Mm-hmm. More maintenance. Yeah. More this. More that. And so, and there is a lot of downtime on weekends. You get half a day off on Saturday. You clean the space station on Saturday. You wipe down everything. Get the macaroni and cheese off the ceiling from the night before. All that stuff. And then Sunday, you usually get the whole day off unless there's like a spacewalk that you're prepping for, or a visiting vehicle is coming, like a Cygnus or something like that.
Attention all Starfleet personnel. New York's only fan-run Star Trek convention, Trek Long Island, is back this summer. Get ready for 3 days of sci-fi fun celebrating your favorite franchise in the Empire State. Meet the stars from Trek shows spanning different eras, including Melissa Navia and Yatidi Padaki from Strange New Worlds, Gabriel Ruiz from Lower Decks, Armin Shimerman, Chase Masterson, J.G. Hertzler, and Kitty Swink from DS9, Ethan Phillips from Voyager, Janet Kidder, Tara Rosling, Conrad Coates, and Elias Defexis from Discovery, and many more, including celebrities who haven't been at a Star Trek convention in years, like Clyde Kasatsu, Natalia Nogalich, and Daphne Ashbrook. Come meet your fellow fans. Take in a panel with your favorite podcasters. Enjoy Dinner with the Stars, featuring live musical performances. Meet authors, artists, and musicians, and so many more during this epic 3-day event brought to you by the talented and inclusive community that makes Star Trek go at warp speed. Trek Long Island takes place from May 31st to June 2nd at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Hauppauge, New York. Visit treklongisland.com for tickets, exclusive packages, and more information. Trek Long Island, going kindly this summer.
Yeah, I did like the fact that the spacesuit that he had, the Russian-made step in the back spacesuit, which was an integral part of the book's Project Hail Mary. And I thought that was a great choice for that book, but also for this, because it made him easy and, you know, he didn't require any other assistance to use that particular spacesuit, whereas the suits that you have to use when you did your EVAs, they were a lot more, they required more than one person to use it. Is that correct?
Yes, it would be really hard for you to dress yourself in an EMU. But people, we have done on the station, we have done two-person EVAs with only two people on the station. Oh, so wow. They kind of help each other, suit each other up. And that probably took a lot longer than having a third person who helps get you dressed, you know? They did a lot of work on the Russian spacesuits. They actually had me doing a lot of Russian translation. They found out I spoke Russian. They said, oh, we need you to translate this from Russian to English, and then we'll get it translated into Czechoslovakian or whatever whatever it was. And I'm like, okay. And they're giving me acronyms. Like, what's the Asu Waida? And I'm like, I know that acronym, but I don't remember. And so I'm like, they were really testing my memory of my Soyuz days in my suit.
Now, they, throughout the film, Adam Sandler's character was calling back to a gentleman that, and I can't remember the character's
Peter.
Name.
Peter.
That where he was calling back and asking him questions. I mean, obviously about his wife, about, you know, whatever, is almost like he was a human relations person. You know, or not a therapist, but just someone in charge of making of his overall well-being. So is that a typical thing for NASA too, to have the astronauts have access to someone like that as well? Or was that just part of the book?
We talked to Capcoms, obviously, about technical things. Hey, the toilet's not working, this and that, you know. And so Peter kind of seemed to play multiple roles, right? He was like the Capcom, we call it Capcom, where he was talking about, hey, time to go do this, you know, task. Gotcha. It was time to go train, time to do this. But then you're right. He was kind of like, hey, you know, I'm your buddy. Tell me what's going wrong. So we talked to our flight doctors from a physical perspective. We used to do that, I don't know, once every week or 2 weeks or something like that. And we would have a one-on-one medical with our flight docs and, you know, talk to, hey, you know, I'm a little stuffy, or I got this, or, you know, you kind of complain about what any issues you might have. And then we did do a tag up with a psychiatrist or psychologist, I don't remember. And that was maybe less often than the flight docs, once a month, maybe, or something like that.
Okay. Interesting. So
you're talking to a lot of people. Plus, you're talking to your family a lot. You're just phoning home.
Oh, okay.
You got a phone. Know, not as fancy as the phone in the movie. It's basically just an IP phone on your laptop. You stick the headset on and you dial anywhere in the world. They can't call you, but you can call them.
Sweet.
It's like the perfect phone.
In the movie, and then it's more in the book too. Is really they go into Jacob's his background. You know, growing up. Kind of as they were coming out of being controlled by the Soviets and kind of embracing democracy and capitalism. They still retain some elements of state control. They're not like the US. They retain some elements of state control. So that Peter character, in some ways, he's a little bit of a bridge between him and, you know, so they're controlling a narrative of what they're putting out to the public. And they're controlling the narrative to the public about this spaceman and his wife and their wonderful relationship, which obviously is not so wonderful, which is, you know, I came away from, before I read the book, I came away from the movie, you know, like, that's what this movie is about. That's what this artsy film is about. It's set in space, but it's really about, you know, human condition related in relationship-y stuff. And that's what the movie is about. Is about him of the person and how he deals with all these things. And the book, of course, goes then into more detail. But I mean, I definitely, even before reading the book, got that whole sense of this is the, you know, this is, you know, the former Czech Republic and how they're dealing with things, which is not how we necessarily deal with things here. Not necessarily.
Well, I mean, I didn't take, you know, so. Like, for example, when the wife calls up and says, hey, I'm leaving you, and, you know, and they decided, hey, we're not sending that message up.
We're
not telling them that. So one of the things you do when you launch on a long duration mission, or maybe, I guess, shuttle missions as well, even the short ones, they say, what do you want to hear from home? Do you want to hear bad news? So you tell your flight doc and your other doctor, say, hey, look, no, I don't want any bad news. I'm going to go up there for 2 weeks, or I'm going up there for 6 months, and I just want to concentrate on the job. I can't worry about something going down. my answer always was, hey, look, you go, if something happens, you talk to my wife and I'll let her decide whether it's something that I should be informed of or something, not something else. You know, like the movie, you guys watch For All Mankind TV show?
I was just going to mention that. I think I'm past where you are talking about. I'm not fully caught up yet, but For All Mankind is amazing. I'm going to make these guys watch it eventually because we're going to have to talk about this on the
Apple
podcast.
TV. My next door neighbor was just yammering about how great it is. He goes, I don't want to spoil anything, but the very first episode is remarkable and it goes from there.
Yeah.
You just buy Apple TV for a month and then watch them all.
But I definitely got the sense in the movie, though, that it's not just about what they tell Jacob. It's still about controlling the narrative to the public, too.
Yeah.
Well, which I think is a little bit different in our country, at least.
But I remember
I'm giving us too much credit.
Yeah.
NASA is very open.
Well, I remember reading in Scott Kelly's book about how when he was up on the ISS and one of his family members took very ill and he was very distraught in the fact that he couldn't get down back to Earth to help out. And he had to deal with that from a distance, and that was very distressful for him. So when they decide not to share the information with him about his wife wanting to leave him, I thought that was so right, because he's already in a mental state. He's been in space for 180 days or something like that. And now you're going to tell him, oh, by the way, your wife is leaving you, and you're not even at the halfway point completion of the mission. Yeah, I can accept that. But then there was like two movies happening. You had the story of the wife and going through her pregnancy all by herself. And then had his adventure with Hanush. And it was like there was two movies happening all at the same time. And not always did they merge very well together, except at the very beginning. And I guess at the very end when they finally resolved their differences.
Did you guys cry when he hugged the spider? I'm asking for a friend.
He's hugging a spider. No. I mean, but I like Hanush. I wound up liking the character a lot, especially because I like those kinds of philosophical discussions. But it's still a spider.
If it was a dolphin or something, I may have cried.
Okay.
Or a beautiful Irish setter or a golden retriever, you know, that could talk. I would have been very happy if, you know, I just didn't want to end up being Old Yeller at the very end, you know.
Old Yeller.
It's shot, you know, and you end up.
Yeah.
But again, the whole thing, that was another thing, is like the spider leaves the spaceship. How did he do that? That they could meet out in space and then he could say bye-bye as you're being consumed by parasites in space, in a vacuum.
So the reason I can believe the spider coming in and out of the space, like we're a little confused about how, again, whether or not the spider is real or some, you know, like manifestation of what's in his head, I don't think it matters, honestly. It's up to the individual to
ultimately
decide.
Yeah,
what that is. And but for those of us who may want to believe that this is a real creature, and this is possibly a realish manifestation of the real creature, for those of us who are also Star Trek fans, I am willing to accept that there is this alien spider out there that seems to be very ancient and long-lived
creature,
and has traveled through galaxies. Has some method of possible transportation in and out of.
That's why I think he's real. I think he's real because he's an alien who can do whatever he wants. And for some reason, Spider was the right choice. Of course.
Well,
go ahead. Explain.
Well, in the book, I don't think that he never actually calls it a spider. He never uses that term. But when he describes that Hanush has these legs and with the pincers at the end, it's almost like it's clearly a spider without actually saying spider.
I wonder if they had any discussion with that pinchy description of saying, is it better to go spider or crab?
Yeah. Yeah.
What would people embrace more?
So here's my question for Rick. Are you aware of how much the original author of the book was or was not involved in the script or in the movie? Did you encounter him?
I did not encounter him, but sometimes, like like Beacon 23, for example, some of the first meetings we had, I flew out to L.A. and
I met Hugh Howey.
Hugh Howey was in the meeting, the director, Zach Penn that was there, and like art directors. And we had like a couple of days of just talking about things, and Hugh Howey was there. Yeah.
Wow.
So that might have happened here also. But then by the time I got it, Colby Day, I think, was the primary script writer. Mm-hmm. He already had like the draft versions of the script, and he had just a bunch of questions to work with me on it by that time.
Interesting. I think too was
never questioned in anything that I did. In fact, they had a little spider prop when I went to the set. They said, "Oh, here's Hamoose." You know, it was just like a plastic or stuffed animal. Cool. I forget what it was.
That was in the Wikipedia instructions or the information about the film. Yeah, that they used to.
I just think that for me too, as I've thought about it, I've watched it in two parts because I didn't have time to watch it all at once, unfortunately. But I don't know what the book has to say. That's why I'm interested. Maybe Adina can counter this at all. But like a spider, in one sense, is a brilliant choice. For even if it's a figment of his imagination, which is a weird choice if it's his imagination, I would want something. Why not manifest your wife to who you're talking to?
Yeah.
You know? But at the same sense, a spider for some people, not all people, can be a terrifying thing. And he becomes... As he gets through the movie, he realizes he does not want to lose his wife. He's realizing he's made some poor choices with what he has pursued or made the most important thing in his life and has left her behind. And so therefore has a fear of the consequence of that, realizing going. So I wonder if that spider, there's any correlation there between this terrifying beast representing his fear of losing what he now realizes is the most important thing in his life. I don't know. I might be digging a hole. I might be running too hard here. But
the best thing, you know, for me about the spider is the fact that it gives me hope that a Project Hail Mary movie could exist someday.
Oh,
and
please.
Well,
you.
And this, because I really, again, just from the page, I love the character. You know, in Project Hail Mary, even though, again, I have a massive arachnophobia, fear of spiders in real life, and especially in my house. They could be outside, just not in my house.
Rocky is so cool. I like Rocky.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. He was really a good guy in that book.
Yeah. And it's just kind of interesting. I'm wondering, you know, because Project Hail Mary, so Spaceman of Bohemia is the book that the movie Spaceman was based on, and it predates at least the release date of Project Hail Mary when that came out. So I'm just wondering if Andy Weir was aware of this other book that was in production for a film that had a major element of a spider when he wrote it. Not that it matters, not that. Yeah. And there's also Adrian Tchaikovsky. I think I'm pronouncing his last name. There's the Children of Time series. So for anyone who hasn't read that yet, the major characters or the major race is an arachnid-like race. And it's very different. It's actually also a very, very, very good set of books. Amazing set of books. Children of Time.
Yeah.
I read
so Chris hasn't spoken up yet. Chris, what are some of your overall thoughts of this film?
It's I don't know. I have so many thoughts where I think overall I liked it. My main criticism would be that there wasn't enough. I would have actually liked, I don't know if maybe a longer runtime, even though I felt like it. I don't know. I just felt like maybe I needed just more. I wanted more of a resolution. I like where it ended, but now I want a sequel. In a world where there's always a sequel, I just want more. I found it fascinating. It was just very intriguing. I started watching it this morning, and then I kept saying, you know, another 5 minutes, then I'll go and get ready and shower. And then I'm like, no, just give me another 5 minutes. Kept doing that. I watched it at lunch, and watching it at work was weird because work is very normal. Nothing weird's going on. But then like putting in the headphones and listening to I don't want to say depressing music, but like the foreboding music was interesting. and the technology, like just trying to figure out when this was supposed to take place was very confusing to me in a good way, in that it had like a 70s vibe with some of the tech, but the fact that they were able to communicate instantly with each other seemed, I mean, I guess that's normal. Is that normal? Like considering how far out he was for them to be able to connect like that, the fact that she, like his wife could call him on the phone
we talked a little bit about that. They took some liberties there.
Yeah. Yeah, so
just enjoy it, guys. Why are we questioning technology? Just
it's not even like whether that's possible, but I like the choice of it's retro, but yet it's more advanced than what we have in a lot of ways.
You're right, Chris. Like the Mission Control looked like something from the 1970s.
Yeah.
The way the layout they were using.
And like Peter's headphones. I was like, oh, that's like very dated, but doesn't seem to be in the 70s. So that was intriguing. Overall, it's one of those things where like reading the reviews, if I were to watch it without having read that people didn't like it, I could see it very much being either it getting like 90% of Rotten Tomatoes, everybody's loving it, or people did not like it. I feel like this is a you either love it or you'll hate it kind of film. Overall, I liked it, but watch something funny afterwards. Like that's my main thing.
Yeah.
Is if you're dealing with any emotional insecurity, this is not the movie for you.
The Wedding Singer. Go into the Wedding Singer after that.
Yes. Rapping Grandma. Absolutely. We need more of that.
Well, just Adam Sandler in one of his best comedic roles ever. Yeah. Wedding Singer. I love the Wedding Singer. Oh yes, that's even better.
That's which the one?
50 First Dates.
That's a sweet movie.
I love 50 First Dates.
That's a sweet movie.
Yeah, yes. I like Adam Sandler's comedy that is not what's the golf movie he was in.
Yeah, the golf one?
Where he doesn't do the dumb voice. That's the funny. He can be funny without the silly voice. So, anyway.
Yeah, like Click, I think it was called. It was kind of a semi-funny one. But the ones that are kind of middle of the road, I enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's nice. Again, I mean, an actor should branch out and try drama. I mean, absolutely. And some, I mean, you look at someone of the nature of Robin Williams, who was a great comedic actor. But when he did a serious role, holy schmoly, the man had chops. But then when you go to Juilliard to learn how to be an actor, you have those type of skills.
You probably have those skills.
But Adam Sandler, he nailed great. The role. Like he did a really good, it's one of those. It's almost a shame because him and Paul Dano were fantastic. I liked, the actor that played Peter from Big Bang Theory. I thought he did a really good job.
Yes.
Wait a second.
Why he was so familiar. Thank you.
Yeah.
Are we sure about this?
That's 100% sure. Yeah.
A few pounds. He's put on a few pounds in the show, but was him. Chris.
I have never been more shocked in the whole 100 episodes we've done that. Chris has shocked me beyond belief.
Really? Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that's
the same. Golden Cot showing up in The Last Starfighter?
I missed it all together. This was
a really a realization that that's the same actor. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I love The Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I completely missed that.
Wow.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for that revelation. Yeah. I'm definitely
rewatching this movie now. 100% rewatching.
But it's just one of those things where it's too bad that it didn't have the best reception because, like, I think if you hear about this and you see, it has 55% on Rotten Tomatoes or whatever it has, it's Netflix and it's Adam Sandler, you're going to think it's like, I can't think of the movie he did recently, the detective one, and it was supposed to be like a comedy and it wasn't very good. People might just dismiss it and be like,
it was had the word murder. It was him and Jennifer Aniston.
That movie.
Oh,
so
those
it's like,
were good. Yeah,
they were fun, though.
Okay.
They
were enjoyable, those.
I feel like if you
I watched both of those movies. They were very funny.
Yeah, I always feel like if you see Adam Sandler, it's like, oh, it's not going to be good. But people like are going to miss out on this phenomenal performance because, you know, they didn't get well received, which I feel like it's one of those films that it can go either way. But overall, yeah, amazing performances.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think this is a film, too, that is, again, I forget who said it now, that maybe it was you, Chris. It's kind of, might not be too many middle-of-the-road fans of this film. There might be, but probably people are going to not like this. It moves too slow. It's too deep. It's too sad. They were expecting more of an outer space adventure, you know, type deal. But I, you know, there's plenty of other movies, though, kind of speak to your point about like Rotten Tomatoes and stuff. There's plenty of other movies that I've watched, and you guys probably have too, that got terrible reviews, and you watch it and go, what in the heck? That's a decent, that was fun, or that was way better than I was expecting. And then some films get all the best reviews, win Oscars, and you go, I don't get it. You know, like, come on, what in the world? These, obviously these people are voting for themselves, you know, so type feel. So this one, I have to say, I was so pleasantly surprised by this film, because I had heard that it was slow and not quite action-packed, but once I got into it and I'm like, man, I wanted to know more about Hainish. I wanted to know more about Adam Sandler's character. Is it Jacob? I got to say it. Jacob, right?
Yeah, Jacob.
And I was intrigued. I think they did a good job of making me want to know more. And I'm with Chris at the end. I was hoping for just a little bit more. And I almost wondered, did you guys feel this way with the very last scene of the movie where he's, is it the Koreans that find him?
Yeah, I think it was the Koreans that find him.
And so, like, to where he calls and he's totally a different person now. All that weight and baggage is removed, and he has that conversation with his wife. Like, I wonder if that was that in there originally. Did they end it originally with that beautiful scene of the Korean ship coming up and reaching out to him, that faraway shot, and that's where they originally were going to end it? And then they decided, no, we need a little something extra. I don't. That's what I'm curious about.
It felt like,
because they could have ended it just right there.
It could have, but that would have frustrated me more, just because it's like there's the whole buildup of he's finally realizing his mistakes and he's finally working through them, and then to not, like, we're ready for that moment of he's gonna finally tell her and then she's gonna respond, and if we didn't see it, I think it'd be more frustrating.
I think that the sequel to this, Chris, that you are hoping for would start with Isabella Rossellini saying, now get your butt back in the spaceship, because you know how much that costs the Czech government and you left it abandoned. Get over there, finish the mission, or no more Nutella for you ever again.
I want some. It was hard watching that. I'm like, I'm trying to stay away from that, but it's like, oh, that's so good. Even spiders like it, apparently.
I hate Nutella.
It's really depressed. They could have had Vegemite. That's horrible.
Nutella is one of the grossest food things ever invented, in my opinion.
Oh, I love Nutella. It's full. The thing is, if you look at actually read the ingredients and like the oil, the processed oils and stuff in it, that grosses me out, but it's delicious.
With a big spoon.
Not so much the food, but how did everyone feel about the product placement? Not so much in the movie, but in the world of the movie, which I thought was really unique.
They talked about that too a few minutes ago, and also in the book. It was very deliberate because that's how the mission was funded.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
So, Rick, let me ask you, if we can, how, like, give us kind of a general overview of your feelings of the film. You've told us a little bit here and there, but about how you feel about the film, what you feel you want to share with us, like, because I really feel like this, it's got a lot going for it, but it's also just such a different type of, that the title is misleading tremendously.
I mean, it's a very simple title, obviously. I mean, it's again, I like the film. Here's what I like about the film. I like the film, the fact that it's different. Mm-hmm. I think they did a fantastic job on the set. They did a fantastic job. I mean, Adam Sandler, you're right. I mean, I think we all agree that his acting was really, he did a fantastic job. He really captured you know, how I think somebody in his position could feel. The story was, yeah, a little bit slow. You know, we all like, I mean, I don't know, me, most people, a lot of us, we like action, you know, fight the aliens off, save the world, you know, type of thing. It didn't happen, but it was interesting because we're all arguing, was the spider real? Was it not real? That's obviously, you know, that's what the author wants you to wonder. Is it real or not? Or is it in his mind? And, he, you know, and Adina said it well. Well, maybe it just doesn't matter. And it probably doesn't. So there's a lot of good things about it. And then there's a few things that are a little bit slower. But, you know, I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad to have been part of it, certainly a small part of it. Pretty glad that I watched it.
Cool.
I know, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dina.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say one of the questions you had, Adina, which is directly to our good friend Brian Donahue, captain.
That was exactly what I was going to say.
Oh. What about the music? What did you think about the music, Brian?
As a fan of kind of this atmospheric feel with a lot of pads and low end strings and slow moving progressions of chords and notes. I listen to a lot of that when I'm writing. I was like, man, it was effective. It gave you the sense of outer space and also what's going on in his mind. I thought it was really great. But then there were moments where we saw more orchestral pieces come in different flowing movements. At least one time, and I can't remember exactly the scene, it was towards the end. It was absolutely beautiful. I think it was when he finally said, "I'm sorry, I understand now." Mm-hmm. I think it was before he went outside the ship to chase after the spider. And beautiful. It was like they set us up for this climactic moment emotionally, and the music was really good, in my opinion. This is a soundtrack I'm going to look up and listen to. See if I still feel the same way I do now. But there were moments where I went, man, I love this. The composer did a fantastic job. Because the point of music is to make you feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the music in this film really helps us feel for Jacob. Really helps us feel everything we're supposed to feel. So, but it didn't get in the way either. So that's my big thing. Don't get in the way.
Okay. So the one thing that we only touched upon this evening is that the parts with the wife, and I think we kind of mentioned it as it's like a, you know, second story, a second movie. And yeah, that's I'll be honest too, that I could have completely done without, you know, seeing anything from her point of view. I'm curious as to why they
really
they even did that. Yeah.
Oh, was that not covered in the book as well?
I agree
with you. Well, so remember, I'm only halfway through the book.
Oh, okay.
But what's interesting is where I'm at the book is not quite the end, doesn't feel like the end of the movie. Well, it feels like it's possibly close to where the end of the movie is. So given I still have half the book to go, I'm curious as to what I'm going to be reading. But now a lot of the book is him reminiscing to all the things that happened growing up and leading to where he was. Where he is now. So maybe, but the storyline with the wife is also completely different in her leaving and how she did it and what he knows and doesn't know. Completely different from the movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
See, I felt like that going back and forth in the film to the wife and from her perspective as well, not just him reminiscing. Mm-hmm. Was super interesting. It brought in another character who was in turmoil besides Jacob. And because without her perspective, I think we probably go, well, it's much more likely we go, well, she's a big jerk for that at that point in time. But because they showed some of her agony and despair kind of in frustration, I think it made it a little bit easier to stomach that, you know,
and they
combated that with, was it her mom that said, are you sure this is, you need to do this now? Like, I don't know. That's
why can't she be a big, especially if we don't see anything from her point of view, if we see only Jacob's point of view, she can be a big jerk. And why, you know, like, okay, she, his wife is a jerk, and just let it, let that be, and let him just deal with the fact that his wife is a jerk. We don't need to, we don't need to see or know anything else.
Right. Well, he then he wouldn't have the, I made some perhaps poor decisions. You really were wonderful. You really were what I wanted in life.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
You know what I mean?
I was going to say, if you didn't get her perspective, I think Hanush saying, hey, I'm not interested anymore, I don't want to hang out with you right now, I think that wouldn't have made sense, because they're like, well, we're still on his side, but we're on his side because we believe, oh yeah, she's just being a jerk, as opposed to we're on this side because we're still, he's our main character, but we're like, oh wow, he really did that stuff. So I thought it was helpful to see her perspective. I also, just because I love world building, I wanted to see what was everyday Earth like in this alternate timeline. So that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, they did deal a lot with, and I liked the fact that, you know, of course, you had all these flashbacks or thoughts, pictures, and images, and they always shot it through like a fish lens, so it looked more obscure. That was his memories, and I liked that, because he was dealing in his dreams or whatever, his problems, his regrets, whatever. That's fine. You can do that. It just that it, as you said, Adina, it was very two films happening all at the same time.
Can I ask a question, Adina? To everybody, because did I miss something? Was there a scene of nudity I missed or something? Why is this film rated R? Is it the scene with his dad and the kid?
I think it's because he swears a couple of times.
Yes. Yes, he does.
That's what, that's according to Google, it says like, oh, rated R because of language.
Oh my goodness. I just don't.
I guess there's a maximum number of F-bombs you can drop before it gets rated R.
Because I know with anything, like, so I shouldn't totally say with
one gets through, two or three.
Yeah, like Beetlejuice had it one scene in it where there was it, and it still was rated PG, you know, 13. So, yeah. We had a few of our own guests drop an F-bomb here or there. We haven't rated
it show happens.
Yet. Quite it does. Happens. It's part of conversation.
I know in like network TV, you have to fight with the network and be like, hey.
Don't you start, Rick. Don't you start.
So funny little story. Years ago when I was living in Ohio, we actually filmed three short little films. Called Project Genesis. We were supposed to be a human hospital. We filmed it all in a veterinary hospital, though. So that was hysterical. We're talking about humans needing medical help, and there's skeletons of cats and dogs on the wall behind us. You know, it's fantastic. There's this one scene, one of the characters cussed a lot, and we would put a black box over her mouth bleep it out, okay? The problem is it was hard. She moved a lot, so it was hard to get that black box exactly where it needed it. And sometimes it would, and she wasn't even saying the F word. She was saying buck or something like that. And because I told her, I directed her, like, it's got to look like you're saying the word. We're going to bleep it out, though. And then the guy doing the editing wanted to put the black box in. But it was so hysterical because every time we couldn't get the black box where it needed to, so it looked like she was cussing, and it was for a church thing too, so which made it even better that church people got to go,
and oh my goodness.
I got to say, lighten up, everybody. Come on.
Yeah.
Chill out.
So the other Genesis, you know, you say Genesis, and Genesis allowed is not.
Come on.
Forbidden.
You're such a nerd.
Yep, I am. So we're going to go around the room, and I want to get everyone's final recommendation on a scale of 1 to 5. You know, what do you think about the movie? Should others watch the movie? Mm. And let's start, Rick. Will you go first?
Thank you.
Yeah. So it's a recommendation. 5 is I recommend you go strongly recommend.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I have to say I'm somewhere between 3 and 4. I mean, from a 4 is like, hey, look, you should go see this movie because it's different, instead of just watching the same old things over and over again. But, you know, it's a little bit slower, and it's a little bit some got some strange points. So maybe it's between 3 and 4, in my opinion.
Okay. Let's see. Chris.
I would say probably a 4 for me. Definitely, I'd recommend seeing this, especially if you're listening to this podcast. It means you like interesting films. Definitely do that. My two caveats are not some conditions. I would say watch this. If you're going to watch this, like try to watch it on a weekend and watch it maybe at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, this is not a movie you want to go to bed thinking about and just feeling down. And then, you know, watch a comedy, watch something that makes you happy afterwards. But yeah, I'd say definitely see this because like Rick said, this is a very different movie. You know, you can go see the same, you can go see other movies that are very similar that to what you like, but this is very much an experience, something very unique, which we don't get a lot as much anymore.
Okay, excellent. Steve, you want to go next?
You know how they say 4 out of 5 doctors recommend? Right. I'm the other doctor.
No.
On the scale of 1 to 5, I give this a really strong 0.5.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
This,
Louise.
This
Goodness
film
gracious.
Was so painful to watch. When I watched the first time, I kept looking over to my wife Elaine going, "Really?" And she'd look at me going, "Really? Okay, well, let's keep watching it because there's going to be a conclusion to this film that's going to make us go, it was worth watching. Sorry." And the funny thing was that Netflix cut it off before I could get to seeing Rick's, you know, byline in the film.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I said, okay, I'm going to watch it another time. So I started Monday morning to watch it a second time. I got about halfway through the film and I said, no more, please, please no more. So
really?
I quickly went to the end of the film to watch the credits. And then I heard probably the most depressing song in my entire life, "Don't Go Away." I'm sorry, but that's just like, this really set up the film. And, you know, it's not just me. The review from the New York Times, written by Alyssa Wilkinson, negatively compared the film to Argylle and Madam Web, calling it an awful movie, a very bad movie, and saying that her favorite part was imagining how many people were going to click on it when it pops up on their Netflix page and wondering whether the door jamb they hit accidentally knocked them in yesterday into some type of concussion. It's
wow.
Not just me. It's not just me. The reviewer of the New York Times panned this film. And you know me, I always try to find the good in every movie.
I really do.
Sounds like
but
it.
I'm sorry. This movie was just so depressing. And there you have it. Sorry, folks.
Can I just say, I'm not going to read the review, but basically top critic, Time Magazine,
yeah.
Loved the movie. Very promising premise.
Yeah.
Really satisfying to watch the actors work because the actors did an amazing job. Cinematography was on point. So I don't know. I want to strongly refute this review, even though it doesn't matter. But it's all
the thing is, it's all just reviews. You know, people like what they like. They don't like what they don't like.
Yeah,
and, you know, whatever. Well, Brian, what do you think? What's your 1 to 5?
I'm giving this film a 4-star because I think it is really different. I think that it is unique and I'm hoping it develops a cult following. If it doesn't, if it's really not going to be successful, I hope that it's that kind of movie that people are going to say, "Hey, this is a film. Yeah, it's different. It's not, don't watch it before you go to bed or if you're missing somebody in your life or something, you know, but it's different." I like what Rick said. It's different and it's worth watching.
Yeah.
That was my longest review in the history of the
Big Sci-Fi podcast.
Probably.
I think very
good.
So.
But I also understand my friend Steve, too. I understand where you're coming from to a degree.
I also want to just clarify. I'm just
totally
giving Steve
disagree,
a hard time.
But I understand.
I disagree, but I just want to let people know I'm just doing this out of fun.
Right.
No hard feelings.
So, Steve, this film is your Starship Trooper.
And RoboCop.
RoboCop.
Brazil. And so many films, Brian, that we went, Adina, or, you know, we said, "This is great." And you're like, I could never watch this movie again. Though, yeah, I will say that Moonfall at least made me laugh. This movie didn't even do that.
You didn't think the spider was hilarious?
This wasn't supposed to make you laugh.
That's not
I
fair.
Don't think Moonfall was supposed to be a comedy either, but it sure was.
It wasn't meant to be a comedy, but it's like disaster films are always like, we got to have some laughs. Like even Independence Day is not a comedy. Doesn't try to be, but they have lines purposely to make you laugh.
I want to say one more time, it was cool to watch this film because Rick was a part of it too.
That's true. Yes.
Okay. So with that, I'm going to give my final recommendation, which is also in the four-ish. I'm kind of at a four-ish spot, but I want to say the people who should, if you're the kind of person who watching 2001 makes you utterly miserable because of the slowness, then this is probably not your film. If you love 2001 and you appreciate the artsy nature of it, then this is definitely something that you should absolutely watch. And absolutely watch it if you're interested in seeing a depiction of, again, I think we heard it from Rick earlier in the episode, a fairly realistic depiction of what a modern day spaceflight experience could be like in a situation like this. It's not the ISS, that is another thing. And so that's another good reason to watch it. However, I really advocate for reading the book. The book is far superior with a lot of detail and really gets into a lot of the philosophy and all the things behind the book. And so I think the people who would really enjoy the book are folks who read Binti by Nnedi Okorafor, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. And then there's another series called the Carls series, which is an absolutely remarkable thing and a beautifully foolish endeavor by Hank Green. If you read those and love those, this book to me has a similar feel with additional philosophy layered in, especially in all the discussions between Jacob and Hanush. And that's to me one of the wonderful elements of the book. So literature author here, just recommending, of course, you know, like books. And sometimes shocking. Books over movies.
Absolutely shocking.
I know, everyone's shocked.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll give you one reason to watch the movie, at least part of it, again. You know, again, these folks wanted everything to be very accurate. And they're saying, now, how do you drink in space? And I said, well, we get these drink bags and we put a straw in it. And they said, where can we get those? And I said, I'll call up NASA and we'll ask them for some. And so NASA sent... The Johnson Space Center sent them 10 or 20 drink bags. So those drink bags in that movie are real ISS certified drink bags.
Sweet.
If that's not exciting and reason to watch, I don't know what is.
Cool. So, So there are a lot of great reasons to watch this movie. So, you know, I'm just going to say, And I'm going to actually, after I finish reading the book, I do seriously want to rewatch the movie. And I really am going to after I finish reading the book. And I want to see it again. Thank you, Rick. Thank you so much for joining us tonight again. Thank you guys. This has been great. This has been very interesting. I'm glad we spent some time talking about a current movie because we had been speaking so much about some of the older films recently. So this is a great treat. And I want to also thank our listeners for listening. Now, if you've got something to say about this film or the book, the first best way to do that is to come find our Facebook group for the Big Sci-Fi Podcast. Another great way to interact with us is to drop us a note at thebigscifipodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Instagram or Twitter/X. Now, we're getting close to Trek Long Island 2, which takes place at the very, very, very end of May this year. If you haven't yet, go grab your tickets. We'll be there along with several other podcasts like our flagship Trek Geeks podcast. There'll be special guests like Melissa Navia. You know, she pilots the ship. Armin Shimmerman. So, you know, watch, make sure you hold on to all your latinum. And there are going to be several more amazing guests there. So treklongisland.com. Now, until our paths cross again, keep spreading goodwill and kindness throughout the universe. May you live long and prosper, and make sure to come back for our next space voyage on the Big Sci-Fi Podcast.